Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's stand up and deliver our opening serve to China, where we've reached the semifinal stage at the Shanghai Masters Tennis Tournament. Top seed and defending champion Novak Djokovic advanced to the semifinals Friday with a three-set victory over German qualifier Misha Zverev. After losing the first set, 6-3, Djokovic rallied and won the next two sets, 7-6 and 6-3. It marked the seventh year in a row the Serbian star has reached the semifinals in Shanghai. Djokovic says Zverev really forced him to dig deep.
Credit to him, definitely, for playing well. He was fighting. He was focused. He gave his best, and he was few points from winning. So it was a very close one.
In the semifinals, world number one Novak Djokovic will play Spain's Roberto Bautista Agut, who is seeded 15th in Shanghai. Bautista Agut defeated Frenchman Joe Wilfried Tsonga in straight sets Friday, 6-3 and 6-4. Djokovic sizes up Bautista Agut for us.
He's also somebody that has a tremendous anticipation on the court. I think he reads the game very well. He's a smart player. He's been playing very well throughout the week. I saw a little bit of his match against Joe today. And he's feeling great. In my opinion, he's been trying to step it up a little bit, be aggressive. He's been serving well, so I mean he's very solid. He's not going to give you the win, so I need to obviously earn it.
You gotta earn it, Novak. For his part, Roberto Bautista Agut says he's ready to challenge Novak Djokovic.
And I'm doing the things well to face Novak. For sure, it's a good moment to face him. Novak is the best. Is one of the best tennis players in the history. And well, I played against him a couple of really good matches, and I know if I play good, I can make him a difficult match.
In other results from Shanghai, second-seeded Andy Murray of Britain advanced to the semifinals with a 6-2, 6-2 victory over the Belgian David Goffin. The 29-year-old Murray won his second Wimbledon title this year, and he also successfully defended his Olympic men's singles gold medal in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. He tells us what his top priority is for 2017.
I would love to win the French Open. You know, if I could guarantee one thing next year, then it would be that event, one that I've had many struggles at over the years. But you know, the last couple of years have come close, and you know that's something that would be nice to win on that surface.
Andy Murray mentioned his struggles at the French Open, which is played on a clay court surface. Murray reached the final in Paris earlier this year before falling in four sets to Novak Djokovic. In Shanghai, Andy Murray will next play Frenchman Gilles Simon in the semifinals. Simon defeated American Jack Sock in three sets Friday. The final score from Shanghai, 4-6. 6-4 and 7-6. From Shanghai, let's go to Moscow, where the head of Russia's Olympic Committee, Alexander Zhukov, resigned this week. Analysts say Russia is seeking to move on from the doping scandal that saw dozens of its athletes banned from this year's Rio Olympics. But as Henry Ridgewell reports, Moscow will struggle to regain the full trust of the global sporting community.
Alexander Zhukov is one of the most powerful men in the tainted world of Russian sport and is also a key political ally of President Vladimir Putin, who said Wednesday that his friend wanted to concentrate on his role as first deputy speaker in the Russian parliament.
Олимпийский цикл закончился, новый только начинается.
This is without doubt the right thing, Putin said. Alexander Zhukov has done a lot for sport and I hope will do more still. Putin did not make any connection between Zhukov's departure and the doping scandal that saw dozens of their nation's Olympic athletes and the entire Russian Paralympic team banned from this summer's games in Rio de Janeiro. But Olympic historian Philip Barker says Russia is likely trying to make a fresh start.
It's very hard for the Russians now because that bond of trust has actually been broken quite significantly.
Zhukov was chairman of the organizing committee for the Sochi Winter Olympics in 2014. In its July report that sent shockwaves across the sporting community, the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, concluded that Russia had run a state-sponsored doping program, even smuggling out positive samples from a Sochi laboratory through a hole drilled in a wall and then replacing them with clean samples. It will take more than a new face to restore Russia's sporting image, says Barker.
There are a few remedies that they can take, and one of them will probably not come easy to them, to throw open their laboratories to international inspectors and not to put any pressure on them. Whistleblowers and people who've tried to say something have been subject to considerable pressure and even intimidation at times.
Russia has accepted there were shortcomings in its anti-doping operations, but says it is being unfairly singled out for political reasons. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
During Thursday's show, I reported how British boxer Tyson Fury voluntarily vacated his WBA and WBO heavyweight titles as he gets treatment for drug and mental health issues. Our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta, says Fury's decision will grease the wheels for an Anthony Joshua-Vladimir Klitschko world title fight. I asked Namdi, how come a Joshua-Klitschko bout has not been announced?
Sonny, don't forget, these two fighters have what we call exclusive contracts. Klitschko has exclusive contract with HBO, home box office. Homeboy Anthony Joshua has exclusive contract with Showtime. Remember, when these two boxers signed this exclusive contract, they signed with a big boxing bonus. So, if you're a HBO or a Showtime, you've given Anthony Joshua, say, $10 million signing bonus. Why are you going to sit around and just don't get a piece of the action when he goes against Vladimir? The same thing with HBO, too. So, these two TV networks have to work it out whereby when they break the bread, everybody will be happy. Mind you, there's big bread on the table, bro.
And Namdi, when that bread breaks, the date I'm hearing is December 10th. Does that seem likely?
Oh, yeah, Sonny. And believe you, I will be in London for this one. Ringside for this one. I'm telling you, man, this may even be the fight of the year.
The O2 Arena in London, you think that's another likely venue, Nnamdi?
Well, that's another likely venue, but the promoter of Klitschko have a venue in Germany on hold. So they still have to negotiate and decide, will this fight be in London or this fight be in Germany, in Berlin? Klitschko is no longer the champion. Anthony Joshua is the big draw right now.
It'd be amazing for boxing in general, for British boxing, for the people that have wanted to see a general step up in class. It ticks all the boxes for me at this present time. A heavyweight fight, you know, a former champion and a current champion, it's a fight that definitely ticks that box that will get people's hairs off their skin, you know. So it's an interesting fight. It's definitely one that people have got interested in just by mentioning it. So there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. You know, we're dealing with a legendary sportsman in Klitschko and a current champion, so there's egos on the table, you know. So we've just got to put that aside and hopefully we can definitely get this deal done.
The future of Tyson Fury. How about an update for our VOA boxing fans?
He's in treatment right now, but he's still saying a lot of stuff on his Twitter account that needs to be taken away from him, because if you want to go into rehab, you need to close the door and just go for treatment. If you're telling us what's happening in the rehab and your therapy every day and your Twitter account is running like Donald Trump's Twitter account, you're not in therapy, man. You're just laying low and having a good time. He needs to close the door, get these demons out of him, and come back next year strong, which is we believe he can if he cleans up and keeps his nose clean.
So you think we haven't heard the last of Tyson Fury?
No, until we take away his Twitter account, Sonny.
Nnamdi, let's talk about Canelo Saul Alvarez, the Mexican boxing star. His last fight was against a British boxer by the name of Liam Smith, and the pay-per-view numbers are in. How about some details?
Well, Sonny, going into this fight, we did not expect Canelo to do big numbers because he was fighting an unknown guy. But when the numbers came out, it said 300,000 buys. So when you times 300,000 buys times $65 each, you come to $19.5 million, Sonny. Well, look at that number. This is a man that did 600,000 when he fought Khan. When he fought Miguel Cotto, he did 900,000. Now he's down to 300,000. What does this say?
Is it a statement about his opponent, Liam Smith? I mean, I think you even said nobody had heard of the guy, Nnamdi.
Well, it's a statement from the fans that until you fight Triple G, we're not going to give you any more money. He must fight Triple G to see 1.5 million buys or 900,000. Any other person now is going to be like in the 300,000 range, which is still big money, but for a superstar, the grand poobah of boxing, 300,000 is a low number, Sonny.
In terms of bargaining position, Nnamdi, for a Triple G Canelo fight in 2017, do you think Triple G has the upper hand at this point?
Not really, because Triple G cannot do more than 300,000 in his last numbers. Because when we negotiate for a fight, Sonny, we look at numbers. When we break bread, we look at numbers. If you come into the table with the low numbers, what makes you think you're going to get 60% of the cake? No way. No way. Your numbers must add up like a Floyd Mayweather number.
Like I always say, for every fight, everybody had a game plan. As of right now, there's not a blueprint on how to beat Floyd Mayweather. No one has found the way to break the Mayweather code.
And speaking of Mayweather, Nnamdi, is he still in the gym? Maybe coming back in 2017?
He knows what he's doing. He's in the gym training, Sonny.
Thanks, Nnamdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Turning to motorsports, South African driver Fabian Lans recently made history by winning the African Open Karting Championship. She's the first woman to win that title, and now she's preparing to take on the world. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, reporter Darren Taylor tells us more about 29-year-old Fabian Lanz.
Pounding music accompanies a practice session at Swartkopf's Raceway. Smells of oil and fuel fill the air. Drivers with their names emblazoned on their jumpsuits prepare to race. One of them is a slim young woman with long brown hair. Fabian Lanz's racing career started at this racetrack more than two decades ago when she was offered a chance to drive a kart.
I think you could have walked faster than what I drove. I went that slow. But somehow the bug bit and I was like, no, I actually really like this. I was like 8 years old.
Several years of intense competitions against boys followed.
I got bullied a lot, not physically or anything like that, but on the track, you know, they push you out, they bump you off. You're sort of isolated by yourself because it's in that time there were much less girls racing.
Lan says her father, a former saloon car racer, forced her to toughen up.
Eventually he said, that's it. If you don't drive left of them, right of them, over them, under them, or whatever you need to do to get past, we're going to stop racing. So I had to make a plan.
That plan, she says, was to drive much more aggressively. Footage from a camera on board Fabian Lanz's 125cc kart shows her racing on a track in Florida, the United States, at speeds sometimes reaching 100 miles per hour. She's known as Iron Lady on the international karting circuit.
I've been labelled the fast girl from the south. I do my annual return at world finals and things like that. When they see me, they're like, yeah, she's here. She's the crazy one, that's cool.
Despite Lance's take-no-prisoners driving style, she says she's had only one major crash.
I got bumped from behind. And I rolled over the guy in front of me, and I landed on my hand and damaged my finger.
Her recent victory at Swartkopf against Africa's top kart drivers, where she captured the African title, means she now has a ticket to the World Kart Championships in Italy later this month. Lanz is used to racing around the globe, and she has a few special places to drive in.
I think my most favourite one would be Belgium. I really liked the country, the track, the food, everything was really nice. The people were awesome. Italy is another one because the competition's really stiff there, and I normally always want to go and race where the most competition is, because to be the best, you have to beat the best.
Eager to give back to the sport, Lanz has opened an academy at Swartkopf. Here she trains youngsters to race karts. Some are so poor that they don't even own bicycles. A few of her pupils roll around the track. At such speed, it's hard to imagine that they're between the ages of 5 and 7. 5-year-old Casey Ensor Smith says karting is amazing.
You're actually riding and you go quite fast. Sometimes you can get scared.
Lance's protégés are mostly all winners. But drivers like 6-year-old Alex Carl just want to talk about the drama they've experienced on the track.
When I was 3, my steering wheel broke and I fell out of my car and other racers were just going right past me. I just rolled into the tires, then my car broke.
His friend Josh LaRue isn't to be outdone.
My friend MK, he spun and then I went over him. I fell out of my whole body, out of my go-kart. Then I bit my tongue and was bleeding from there to there.
Lance warms the kart engine up before another practice for the world champs. She says everywhere she goes, people ask how she feels about being a pioneer in motorsport. Her answer is usually the same, and given with a cheeky smile. I'm nothing special, just one of the boys. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Pretoria.
Thanks, Darren. And Fabian Lanz, you go, girl. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Happy Friday and sporty greetings, Andrew.
A very happy Friday and very happy sporty greetings to you as well.
What is trending in the sports world on this Friday?
No joy in Mudville today. Of course, a famous poem where Casey strikes out while the Washington Nationals struck out last night, losing to the Los Angeles Dodgers 4-3 in that decisive Game 5 in the National League Division Series. So the Washington Nationals will not advance on to the National League Championship Series, but the Los Angeles Dodgers will, where they'll play the Chicago Cubs. And of course, as we've talked about on the other side in the American League, you have the Toronto Blue Jays will play at the Cleveland Indians. So of those four teams, we'll have two of those that go to the World Series sometime next week. But lots of social media talk about this Dodgers-Nats game and just the fight of the Nationals to come back. They were down 4-1 in the later half of the game, and they fought back to get to 4-3, and fans really thought they were going to make a comeback. Unfortunately, it didn't happen for them. And just, you know, lots of people saying this is why you don't quit. This is why you keep fighting. This is what October baseball is all about.
Lots of pressure.
Lots of pressure, but they lived up to it. Unfortunately, they couldn't close it out. But a great stat that MLB Stats tweeted out that this game last night was 4 hours and 32 minutes long. That makes it the longest 9-inning postseason game ever. And that includes World Series, includes all the playoffs, the longest playoff game that didn't go into extra innings. So a baseball game is 9 innings. This game lasted the full 9 innings, didn't go into extra innings. Unfortunately for the Nats, they would have liked to have gone in extra innings or end in the bottom of the ninth with a big win, but that didn't happen. But a huge, huge stat for them. And it shows how much fight there was that this game went for so long. Usually a baseball game nowadays is about 2.5, 2 hours and 45 minutes. So this went about 2 hours longer than a usual baseball game.
And because of the length of that ball game, Andrew, Nationals fans also had some tough transportation issues to deal with during the seventh inning. Metro, the public transportation network here in the Washington area, flashed a sign that said last train from Navy Yard, which is closest to the ballpark, leaves at 11:39. So most of those fans weren't taking the subway home.
No, there was someone that tweeted out, and she said that, you know, she noticed, she looked around when they flashed that sign up, and she didn't see anybody leave their seat. So she said, good on them for not leaving to try to catch that train. But now, that was a big controversial decision in here in Washington, that the Washington Metro didn't extend its hours to stay open later for this playoff game. They did say if the Nats had made it to the World Series, they would have considered keeping it open later, but unfortunately that's not going to happen this year. But Nats fans, to their credit, what they did, instead of, granted, there was some complaining. It wasn't like there was no complaining. There's always complaining about the Metro in D.C., but in addition to the complaining, what the Nats fans did was they had a hashtag Nats Ride, and they actually used this hashtag to coordinate with other people to do carpools. There's not a lot of parking by the stadium. Usually people take mass transit, so people tried to coordinate with that, and people used that very successfully. Case in point from that tweet, that people stayed in their seats. They didn't run to catch the train. They carpooled instead.
Andrew, our Voice of America listeners can follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, we're talking about baseball here in the U.S. having some very big implications in these playoff games, and a match in Rome, however, didn't have as many big implications, a charity football match, soccer match. But here's the problem with this, and here's why this is trending. It was this charity match and some big-name greats playing, Diego Maradona, Juan Sebastian Verón. Those two great players got in a bit of a tussle on the field. They were had some words back and forth. There's a little bit of shoving going on. Now, here's why this is trending. This shoving and verbal back and forth was at this charity match. It was Pope Francis's match for peace.
Match for peace.
So the Pope was holding this match for peace, and what do? They start fighting, they start bickering, they start shoving each other. So a lot of people, the general consensus on social media as people saw this was, did they forget this was a match for peace? I mean, it's in the title of the event, and they couldn't be peaceful on the field. So they were getting a lot of attention, a lot of negative attention because of that. But yeah, hopefully the rest of the match was peaceful despite their antics back and forth.
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Have a good weekend, Andrew.
Thanks so much, you too.
And that wraps up the October 14th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to producer Kwame Ofori. Thanks also to engineer Cornelius Tenner. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Economic progress for Nigeria's most vulnerable population improved in October, thanks to a new agreement between the United States of America and the government of Nigeria. On October 5th, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, announced $92.73 million in additional developmental assistance to support the five-year $2.3 billion agreement signed with the Nigerian government in 2015. The assistance agreement announced in Abuja brings the total of developmental assistance provided to $474.74 million. This funding will continue to help Nigeria reduce extreme poverty in a more stable democratic society. Activities will stimulate inclusive economic growth, promote a healthier, more educated population, and strengthen good governance. We are pleased to contribute additional funding in support of the agreement signed with the Nigerian government in 2015, said USAID Mission Director Michael Harvey. With their leadership, we know this funding will have a significant impact on the well-being of Nigerians, he added. In an effort to align Nigeria's development plans with sector-specific strategies, USAID collaborated with the Nigerian Ministry of Budget and National Planning, the Nigerian Ministries of Health, Agriculture, Power, and Education, and state-level government counterparts to structure the agreement, which is in place until 2020. In addition to the developmental funding, the United States provides humanitarian assistance to people affected by the ongoing conflict and severe food insecurity in Nigeria and throughout the Lake Chad Basin. Since fiscal year 2015, the United States has provided more than $366 million in humanitarian assistance and continues to be the single largest bilateral humanitarian donor to the region. About USAID. USAID partners to end extreme poverty and promote resilient, democratic societies while advancing our security and prosperity. In its partnership with Nigeria, the United States strengthens social stability through social services, supports transparent and accountable governance, promotes a more market-led economy, and enhances Nigeria's capacity as a responsible regional and trade partner. The United States is proud to work with its partner Nigeria to promote the prosperity and well-being of the people of Nigeria, the region, and the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria is transmitted by mosquito bites. But there are some things you can do to reduce your risk. Wear light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, including long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. Eliminate any standing water around your home, including water that collects in wood piles, taps, puddles, old buckets, water jugs, and containers that livestock drink from. And if you can get one, use an insecticide-treated bed net to cover you and your children while you sleep.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one not jeje. This one not jeje.
Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.